This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
On Joy 94.9, this is the Escape Hour, and you're here with Fiona Brooke, Mark Adams, and Russ Masterton. And where are we going, Fee? And please introduce this amazing guest of ours.
Well, you know, Russ, we've been to a lot of parts of the world, but we have never travelled to Pakistan on this show. So our guest today is Megan Ponsford, who is an old friend of mine and has just returned recently from Pakistan. Welcome to the program, Megan.
Thanks so much, Fee.
Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
I think that you're backstory about why you're in Pakistan is going to be fascinating for the listeners, and then of course learning more about Pakistan itself, which is a much, much undervalued country from what we were speaking about when you first came in.
Absolutely. I went to Pakistan first in 2015. I was doing my PhD on a colonial cricket tour that happened, and I'd thoroughly researched all the Indian cities where the tour had taken place. And I'd forgotten about Lahore and Karachi.
Right.
And I kind of thought, from a research perspective, that really isn't fair.
Yeah.
But I was a bit too scared to book a ticket and go to Pakistan.
And I want to ask you about that, because that is the general consensus in the travel industry. I mean, I have never had anyone come into our agency and say, you know, I'd like to go to Lahore, just book me a ticket and we're off. It just doesn't happen. So no wonder you were scared.
So, you know, it was January 2015 and I get an overnight email from the head of counterterrorism from the Australian Federal Police based in Islamabad saying, do you want to come as a guest of ours and a guest of the Australian High Commission and give a talk at an event which was celebrating the start of the Cricket World Cup, which is actually taking place in Melbourne. So usually at a World Cup, I'd be at the opening ceremony, first game in Melbourne, but instead I was in Pakistan talking to a whole lot of people.
How exciting.
It was absolutely fascinating. Yeah. But I went into this, I had about a week to decide whether I was going to go. I did all the due diligence and rang all these people who may know the guy I was speaking to or not. And I'm so glad I went. I'm so glad I went from, first of all, a research perspective, because it filled in all those missing gaps.
Yeah.
And on that note, it's really interesting because the Pakistan people really wanted to talk about something that happened 80 years earlier, whereas the people in India weren't really interested in sort of colonial India.
Right.
So, you know, the birth of India to them was in 1947
with
the Indian independence, whereas the Pakistanis kind of lovingly held on to, I guess, kind of the glory
days. Their heyday, yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that we should probably back the truck up slightly. And Megan, maybe you can tell us, why were you invited? Like, give us some background on your PhD and your work, and then our listeners will have a context.
Oh, great. I did my PhD on the 1935-36 first cricket tour to India, and it really was a rebel tour. It was a professional tour. The players were paid really well to go, and in light of it being kind of after the Depression, times were tough, they were really happy to earn $500 to go to India.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really like World Series cricket, but it just was 70 years earlier.
Ah.
And because it sort of broke all these sort of cricket rules of cricket being an amateur game, it was kind of looked down upon by the orthodox cricket community.
You mean the Brits?
Well, no, the Brits and even the Australian Cricket Board. The Australian Cricket Board. So they, despite having nothing to do with the tour, they vetoed who was allowed to go. And they wouldn't allow any of the big names to go. So it ended up being this really weird tour where one guy was 54 and another guy was 19. And there were all these kind of unknowns or ex kind of quite famous players who had retired from cricket. So it was kind of a unusual tour because, you know, there was a great variance in age and they really were rebels. There was one guy who had a bit of Aboriginal blood, which, you know, really hasn't happened in the cricket world. No one really knows about that. So it was a really, really fascinating tour. I discovered it when I was working at the Melbourne Cricket Ground, and I found an archive of material that had been, you know, buried in the you know, in storage for years and years and years and years, and it had belonged to my great uncle, who was an unknown cricketer called Tom Leather. He was
Tom Leather.
Yeah, he was the brother-in-law of my grandfather, who was Bill Ponsford, who was quite a famous Australian cricketer. But he more interested in the story of the of that, you know, the unknown relative rather than the known one.
The fair known one, yeah. That's right. Who has a stand named after him at the MCG? For those cricket,
that's
those
about
MCG
the extent
fans.
Of my cricket knowledge.
Oh, really?
It's terrible. No, I just love the fact obviously you are very passionate about the game, and a gay Aussie male, and really. You know, aside from looking at how cute some of the players are, I've never been to a cricket game. But you're
really,
I just love
football. Do you like football?
I've been to the MCG and cheered on my beloved Cats.
Yeah. This is funny. When Fee first asked me to come on the show, I had to check the football fixture and make sure my beloved Demons weren't playing.
Wow, you are passionate, aren't you?
I am indeed.
Wow. So, what is it about cricket? And I'm even more. Dare I go there? Because you know we're very gender fluid here at Joy. Yeah. But what is it for a woman that makes you so passionate about cricket? I love it. You know.
Well, really, it's this specific story in cricket history, which is really an unknown story. Mm. That despite it being the first time an Australian 11 went to India, which you think in light of how significant the competition is between those two countries, like it's really important to. The success of cricket that Australia and India meet on each platform multiple times a year. Mm. They really hold the purse strings. So it's more important that Australia play India than Australia play Britain in the Ashes.
Right.
I see.
And so it's really this unknown story, which is just... It's got such an incredibly rich fabric, and it broke all these rules. So they really were, you know, rebels heading off in 1935.
So when are we going to see the movie? I think that there needs to be a screenplay. I can see it, you know, because there is always the fact that there are so many Australian stories that have not been told in film.
Yes.
Like, you know, in the United States, every story is being told.
You've just got to be handed it to a Hollywood mogul and
that's
away
right.
it goes.
But in Australia, there's all these wonderful, unique stories. So this particular tour was paid for by
the Indian royal family, by the Maharaja of Patiala. Mm. So there was an awful lot of, you know, whiskey drinking and elephant riding and carousing and flirtation and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
It sounds like my kind of trip to India. I've been to India and I love how they are very passionate about the game.
Yes.
You know, as soon as you travel anywhere in India and you mention you're Australian, well, then out pops, you know, half a dozen Australian cricketers' name. And
you had to pretend you knew them?
Well, the first time I didn't. Okay. And I just go, yes. But the second and third time I went, I actually look at the I go through the Australian cricketer's bio, so I could actually sound butch and sound like I know what I'm talking about when I'm mingling with the Indian men. And in fact, last time we were in Delhi, it's so big that we got taken to a Delhi cricket ground, and this place is massive. And there would have been I would guess about 55 games being played at once on this massive oval with all these guys. And so is it like that in Pakistan as well? Are they that passionate about the game too?
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, I think that's the one thing that the Indians and the Pakistanis agree on is their love of cricket.
Well, I certainly remember when I was living in New York and I was not paying any attention to cricket. Every time I got into a taxi and the taxi driver was either Indian or Pakistani and would hear my Australian accent, immediately they'd start talking to me about cricket. I'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not following it currently. I'm living in another the country where I'm not following the cricket.
Well, yeah, so how did you get over your fear about going to Pakistan?
Because it all happened so quickly that I kind of had to get over it. Once I decided I was going, there's kind of no turning back. I actually booked, I went with my partner and I actually booked business class.
Of course.
So I thought, if this is the last time I'm going.
Yeah, you want to have
in
a couple.
Style,
You want to have going some Bali before you go.
But as you know, even getting to Pakistan is really difficult because the only airline that flies, you can either go via Emirates, you know, or you can go via Thailand. So Thai Airlines fly in there.
Yeah.
So, but that's the only two ways you can go.
There's no direct route there, that's for sure.
No. But the really interesting thing was that the first time I went in 2015 was actually flying from Lahore to Delhi,
right,
which is a really short flight. Like, it's really, and that was the most expensive short flight I've ever been on. Not going business class this time, but it was. I mean, no one does it.
Lahore to Delhi.
Yes.
Capital.
And it's actually stopped now. It was a once a week flight, and they've stopped it now.
It's a very strange relationship between Pakistan and India.
The British have a lot to answer for with the partitioning.
Mm. Well, you can go to the border there at Amritsar, and every day they have this
the Wagyu ceremony.
And it's extraordinary. They dress up in these amazing outfits, and they
do a bit of high kicking.
They do. Have you seen?
And chest pumping, and
peacock feathers.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Yeah, it's better than
all the regalia. Yeah,
it's 10 times elephants. Better than the can-can, and these guys look pretty hot, don't they?
I know. They are a snack.
Oh, they are a snack. More than a snack. But what I loved even more is they have a music off as well. So, you know, not only have you got these two men from different countries at the border having a kick-off with each other, then you've got this...
It's literally a kick-off.
This boom-boom music happening to see who can get the loudest music, and the Indians are all screaming and the Pakistanis are all screaming, and you think, oh, God, I've arrived, in a way.
So you hope... Yeah, you're just waiting for the nuclear standoff, but that's okay.
That's right. We can handle that. So, yeah, what were your expectations arriving in Pakistan? Because I know I went to Iran and we thought it was a good idea to go, and it was one of the best things I've ever done in all my travels.
Yeah.
And it's not until you get to these countries where, you know, you think, oh, my God, why am I doing this, that you actually arrive and you think, this is actually fantastic.
I was so worried about going. My biggest fear was, what am I going to wear? Seriously, I laboured over... My God, I've got to completely cover up.
Yeah.
Hmm. And when I got there, we went to all these high-end, you know, cocktail parties, dinners, dances, discos, whatever, with all these chicks wearing tiny little dresses and Jimmy Choo shoes. And
not at all what you had in mind.
Not at all. And I really felt like I was, you know, old maid.
That's not good.
Yeah. Golly, that's never good.
That's not good for a groovy Australian chick to feel like that.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, what is good is we have a message, actually.
Oh, do we?
Yeah. This is from Donna Frock, a.k.a. Seamus. A.k.a. Seamus. Donna Frock says, great to hear Megan Ponsford on the wireless. Awesome woman and contributor to our history. Listening in Eagle Hawk.
Good on
Thank
you, Donna.
You. Thank you.
That's actually Donna Frock. Donna Frock, that sounds like a drag name, doesn't it?
Donna Frock, it sure does.
It's awesome. I love it.
Well, I love the fact we've got some listeners.
Yes, thank you for sending that message in, Donna, and we're excited to hear. So did you have to cover up is the big question. No, you didn't.
You don't have to wear a headscarf?
I didn't. Mm. You know, I thought I'd be not drinking for the time I was there, and that went out the window on the first night. That was crazy. And because you go and stay in a hotel and they've always got a little private room, which is just, you know, number 4765A or something like that.
Yeah.
Looks like any other, you know, bedroom in the hotel. Mm. You knock three times.
Wow.
And really?
Yeah. It's all secret squirrel stuff.
Wow.
And again, no, you know, monetary transactions take place. Mm. It's just added to your bill at the end and you sign the chit.
Mm. My research today actually said that men and women have to cover up in Pakistan.
Well, I think for one moment I'm not imagining that the Pakistan that I saw was kind of the real Pakistan.
Ah, okay, because you were a special guest, VIP.
So in the street, day to day, you have to cover up?
Well... I walked around all the cities and I didn't feel, you know, uncomfortable doing so. Mm. And, you know, I always wore a wrap, I never covered my head, but I'd always cover my sleeves, my arms.
Mm.
But, you know, I was really surprised about the liberalness of the environment that I was placed in.
And none of us would have any idea about that, because it's a bit like places like Iran and Pakistan. We're always given this negative vibe about those countries, and as soon as everyone sees smart traveller advice, don't go, then instantly it's off everyone's travel list. But there's nothing wrong with going to those countries, really. So, yep.
I've missed my favourite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do? podcasters to battle.
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry. Our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9 fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
Ask you a question.
You can, of course.
About the passports, the absence of passports.
Yes, you may. Yeah.
Because I've had an awful lot of trouble getting into America after having a Pakistan stamp.
I'm with you. I'm same passport. With me about Iran, yes.
So am I going to be, is there going to be a big red light going, you know?
Yep.
Yes, there will be. So what you need to do is...
Trump.
Obviously, you're not a terrorist or a threat to the United States, so you will need to go in and have an interview with the US government at the consulate on St Kilda Road, and they will decide whether you're welcome to go to the United States or not. Then they will give you a five-year visa and your passport, and every 5 years until you no longer travel, you have to keep reapplying for a visa to travel to the United States.
So that's what I heard. Someone said recently that I would have a similar problem having been to a number of Middle Eastern countries over the last few years.
When and where?
I was in Syria just before.
Yes, you will. Yep. Definitely will need to go and have an interview
because
with the US government.
In the past, when you actually you could cancel your passport, for example, if you travel to Israel, then some other Middle Eastern countries won't allow you in.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I've heard that when you travel to Israel, they'll stamp your passport on a separate piece of paper.
Yes.
Or as I was advised once, not that I was on my way to Israel, but if you had been, you should actually just lose that passport
and get a new one.
But if you're going with the passportless system, you can't lose anything. It's glued to you.
It'll be all over your face. It's all your background, travel. So you do need to go and get a visa.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Americans are so crazy. We had a customer who was wanting to travel to the United States and applied for his ESTA, which is their electronic visa. Yeah. And in his history, he got arrested about 40 years ago for stealing some condoms from a chemist, right? So he's got a criminal record and they won't let him go to the United States.
That's
and
incredible.
This is 40 years ago. It's just rooted. Insane. Absolutely rooted.
bottom of the barrel, I'll scrape it.
Anyway, no more digression. Mark, would you like to know more about Pakistan?
I do. I'm enthralled. Pakistan is famous for its natural beauty.
Yes.
The mountains, the snow, the stunning scenery, and it's also known for huge cosmopolitan cities with tens of millions of people living in it. How do you navigate that, particularly as a woman travelling? Is it easy to get around Pakistan?
On the most recent trip, I was with a team of cricketers. So we just did internal flights and then we're in a really smelly vinyl, you know, lined minibus for some time as well, which was just terrible.
With everybody smoking?
well, everyone's smelling, actually. After they'd played cricket, you can just imagine that.
So yeah. Mark Adams would have loved to have gone on that trip.
she was selling it to me.
In a smelly bus with cricketers for
all those musty grundles. Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, but I honestly, I haven't seen much of the countryside.
Yeah.
And
tell
that's
me you
what
didn't
I...
take any, you know, any of that sandpaper with you on that trip.
Actually, I was being interviewed on radio when that news came through.
Yes.
Wow.
Because
that would have put you in a bit of
Africa. And I was just carrying on about the goodwill of cricket and sportsmanship and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Then in a pause in the interview, I got a tap on the shoulder. Do you know what's just happened, Megan? I was, oh, my goodness, disaster.
Yeah. Well, you would have been upset.
I was really upset. Yeah, I was really upset.
Well, it outraged the nation over here.
It did.
And
we really cracked the sads over it.
I think that apparently it's actually rife within the sport. The only problem was they just got caught. Now, I don't know much about cricket. That could have just been a news grab. What do you say about that, Megan?
Yes, it is rife in the sport. Mm. But they were just so... There was no discretion with how they were doing it.
A bit arrogant. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about which of the cities you visited and which one you liked. What are the differences?
Lahore is a beautiful...
My drag name,
Lahore is a beautiful old city with lots of old, you know, Mughal monuments and that kind of thing. Like the temple is just magnificent, and it was like the Taj Mahal.
Mm.
But Taj Mahal equivalent in Lahore without there being any tourists walking around.
Like, why, it's weird. Why is that? Is it because Pakistan attracts few tourists?
No one goes there. Seriously. Yeah. And you walk along the street and you are just photographed. Everyone wants a selfie with you.
Really?
Everyone.
It was like that in Iran as well.
Yeah.
It was. I thought it was really fun. The enthusiasm.
Yeah. Yeah. You do get a bit sick of it after a while, though, I think. I mean, it just happens. I mean, it happens 300 times a day.
Mm.
What's the food like in Pakistan?
Oh, the food's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. It's chicken and rice and rice and chicken and rice, but cooked in the most magnificent way. Bit of goat.
Oh, okay. Yeah, a bit of goat stew.
Do they have like Pakistani dal and things like that? Like Pakistani versions of...
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And then it's all because of its, you know, colonial origins. It's got all that English, you know, tea and asparagus rolls and that kind of thing as well.
Ah. Tea and asparagus rolls. Tinned asparagus.
I'm feeling a bit hungry now.
Okay.
And so Lahore.
Sorry,
beautiful.
I was just recoiling in horror.
Beautiful. Asparagus rolls.
Yeah, tea and asparagus rolls. It just sounds like a recipe to go straight to the loo.
I don't know where to go from there.
Not to the tin Not asparagus to the aisle. Yeah.
And then you're in Karachi?
Yeah, and Karachi is a really busy, modern city.
It's very funky, isn't it? Quite
really
high-tech.
Really funky, absolutely. And it was, you know, had its heyday in the 60s and 70s. Mm. And there's some really great stories about, you know, JFK and Jackie Kennedy visiting there and staying out all night.
Really?
Yep. And sort of, you know, staggering home in the morning, having lost Jackie Kennedy, having lost her shoes and having lost all their bodyguards.
Okay.
So we actually went to the disco where this night supposedly took place.
Disco. Yeah.
No, and it's got that really, all that fabulous, which I know a lot of people hate, but that fabulous sort of 60s, 70s architecture. Like, there was a whole lot of construction then, and there really hasn't been much since then. So there's
kind
of...
So we're talking, like, dark smoke mirrors?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Oh.
I love that look.
Yeah.
It's so glam.
Yeah.
Well, so tell us what parts of... I mean, if you were in Lahore, are there specific parts that must visit?
Oh, look, and this is really weird. It's like when you're talking about New York, I think my favourite spot in New York, Central Park.
Mm.
And my favourite spot in Lahore is Lawrence Gardens.
And they're beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. Mm. It's a you know, old English garden, but it's in amongst sort of the hubbub of the city, but it's just so tranquil in its, in its, you know, self. You know, it's just...
Sounds beautiful.
Incredible. So you just sort of spend ages walking around there, being photographed all the time, but,
I was a bit surprised to, you know, the research in travel, basically, the cheapest airfare you could get to Karachi was about $11.75, which for Australian terms into Asian ports or the subcontinent is on the higher end. Did you find it expensive once you actually got there and landed and started spending money?
I hate to say this, we had everything paid for us pretty much. So it was really airfares, accommodation. Actually, we had in Islamabad, we stayed in this really swanky hotel that they let all the cricketers stay for gratis.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
They were just so thrilled to have Western tourists there.
Yeah.
So, but really didn't spend much money at all. I mean, of course, I went a bit crazy on the touristy jingle jangles at the end, which, you know, you just can't avoid doing.
Yeah, it's pretty hard not to get sucked in. It's like you're exiting through the gift shop and you just want to buy and bring all these knickknacks back. Not many pashminas.
Oh, look, I've been to India so many times, I've got pashminas. I've got cupboards of pashminas at home. I don't need another pashmina.
Joy 94.9.
You're on the Escape Hour on Joy 94.9, your food and travel show. Oh, I can't believe Adam from Caulfield is going off to LA. What a lucky man he is. He's very lucky, isn't he?
South Caulfield.
I wonder if he's got a partner.
Is that a difference? Mm.
Yes, there is actually quite a big difference.
Is it?
Yeah,
it's a big suburb, and there's an East Caulfield, a South Caulfield, a North Caulfield. There's no West Caulfield, though.
Escándalo.
But it's a big suburb. I've got to tell you, I live in North Caulfield.
Are you?
Do you have Benny and the Jets kind of fights between the North Caulfielders and the South Caulfielders?
That would be so exciting, but sort of no, I don't
think so.
Knives
in their socks.
Well, North Caulfield's the Turek of Caulfield.
Yeah.
North Caulfield is the Turek of Caulfield, that's for sure. Now, it needs to be noted that I rent my house. I do not own my house. They sold a house across the road from me once and it went for $2.25 million, and I walked out of my front yard And the woman standing there said, oh, you must be so happy. And I went, what do you think? I own this house? Are you crazy? Anyway, we're not talking about Corfu. We're talking about Pakistan. Two very different places.
And, yes, have you been to the posh end of Karachi, for
example? The posh end of Karachi. We haven't really touched on Islamabad, but I think that what we do need to talk about, which is always very important to our listeners, is travelling if you're a part of the community and what the rights are for people in the LGBTI community in Pakistan. Megan, you were saying that there's just been recently a change.
Yeah, there's new laws in place where trans people are being, you know, less discriminated against, or hopefully not discriminated against.
Yeah, they don't, sexually speaking, they don't. There is no law legalising same sex between males and females, which is very important. So you obviously you can go to jail if you are having sex with a man, a woman. So you do need to watch that, and obviously.
And does that actually happen?
It doesn't. It doesn't happen. The laws are there.
Yeah.
You can get fined, or you can go to jail for up to 10 years. So yes. I guess it's there if you would be a repeat offender. I would imagine that would be the time that they'd say, you know what, we don't need you on our streets anymore. We're going to put you away. So.
As I said before, I mean, I was in a particularly liberal
part of the country.
I mean, all the big cities have got, you know, gay communities, I'm sure, you know, and
I think
was
every
kind
big city in the world does now, don't they? So there's a few interesting Pakistani restaurants here in Melbourne that we all should give a go, I think, one day. I've noticed one's called the Khyber Pass. So we should make an effort and go to Vermont South and go to the Khyber Pass one night, Fiona and Mark. That sounds like a great place to go to. Well, the Khyber Pass, of course, is in Pakistan.
Yes, it sounds like that will be accompanied by the Benny Hill soundtrack if we decide to go down the Khyber Pass. Was it Benny Hill where they...
You would tap him on the head every 5 minutes.
Or carry on the buses or whatever it was, where carry on up the Khyber.
That's right.
Carry on up the Khyber.
Yes, there we go. There's a blast from the past. But Pakistani food is quite unusual, and it really is still the Indian food. Post-partition, things took on a name, but it was still India, the Indian subcontinent.
Yes.
And it was the British who put this artificial line there. There was no difference between Pakistan and India until... It was in 1947 where the partition happened. Yeah. So it's quite unusual how it's been called Pakistani food. I guess the Pakistani people want to call it that because that's their home, passport, nationality and identity. But it still is the Indian subcontinent and in all of its incredible diversity. There's nearly 1.6 billion people, I think, collectively on the subcontinent with about 200 recognised languages, from deserts to snow-capped mountains to tropics, fish, vegetarian. There's a huge amount of diversity throughout the country, and not only in the religions but the languages, the even how the people look, the height of the people. It's huge diversity.
It's amazing. So, getting back to the cricket side, when the Australian teams do go there, does the...
Well, the Australian teams don't go there.
They don't. Okay, so there's something I wasn't aware of.
So in 2009, the Sri Lankan cricket team, the bus that Sri Lankan cricket team was travelling on was shot at.
Okay.
And a bomb was thrown at it.
Right.
And that put them off?
So it's a no-go zone,
So just in recent years, they're starting to get a few international teams coming in. Uh-huh. And I actually went to the PSL, which is the Pakistan Super League. That was on when I was there, which is the 2020 competition, just like the Pakistani version of the IPL.
Yep.
So it's a domestic cricket competition where they have lots of international players coming to play in. For the local teams. They played most of their games in the UAE. And so last year was the first time that they had one game in Pakistan. And this year they had the three finals. So had the two semi-finals and the grand final in Pakistan.
And all successful.
And the cricketers had the option, the visiting cricketers had the option to pull out when the team went to Pakistan. When they played in Pakistan, some players pulled out, some players went through. And sure, they're being paid incredibly well to do so. And it was mainly players at the end of their career. So it was kind of, you know...
Already dead inside.
Well, it's kind of, yeah, I was just super for them, I guess. You know, if they can earn another, you know, $500,000 or whatever to go and play a competition.
That'll pay for the caravan trip around the country.
Yeah.
So, Megan, do you find a man in a baggy green attractive?
Well, I met Shoa Bakhtar when I was there, who's the most gorgeous man imaginable, and just charming and gorgeous and charismatic and generous and everything. And he took my team of cricketers out one night and just paid for everyone, and he's just a fabulous, fabulous fellow.
Yep. That's so fantastic.
That sounds extraordinary.
And so I guess these visiting cricketers coming to Pakistan would be seen as absolute idols then?
For the PSL.
Pakistanis,
absolutely. I mean, there's mobbed everywhere they go. Yeah. But Shoaib told this great story of he actually went to India a couple of years ago where, you know, he's just a megastar in Pakistan and kind of loved and simultaneously hated in India.
Yeah.
And he was travelling with one of the cricketers that I travelled with, and they're in India, Delhi together, and they go, oh, let's go on a tuk-tuk. And it's just amazing that this guy who's just got such international fame would be, you know, going on a tuk-tuk.
Well, that's how you travel around Delhi, isn't it?
Well, apparently he's just being chased by, you know, swarms of children just chasing him on his autograph.
Oh, that's so divine. Yeah. Is there any women's cricket at all played?
There is women's cricket, yep.
Because the whole...
So that's really
women's
progressive
cricket,
again. Yeah, this is nationally.
Yes, you know, there's a women's national team who play both or all forms of the game. They play Test 2020 and the one-day version of the game. And they're actually good, and they, you know, they're part of the Women's World Cup as well. Mm. And there's actually a guy I know who works for the Pakistan Cricket Board who's done a whole lot of research into sort of rights of women and that kind of thing. So in many ways, yes, it's a very traditional country, but, you know, they're trying to, to speed up on their... you know, ideas about things.
Mm, mm.
So, you know, the Pakistan Cricket Board has been instrumental and proactive in getting rights for women.
Wow, that is really fantastic. Mm. So you'll be going back to Pakistan, no doubt.
Going back to Pakistan.
And if you had a top tip, a top thing, place that you want to go to, well, either you want to return to or is there somewhere you haven't made it to yet?
No, look, I really want to go up to the mountains. Mm. I want to go hiking in the mountains because I've seen photographs and they're just... incredibly beautiful. There's a guy I met this time who sort of ran the buses that we were transported on, and he does a whole lot of treks.
Amazing.
Takes people up trekking. You know, I kind of think of, I'm an urban dwelling person, I'm more of a city person, but the physical beauty of the mountains.
You don't
just,
want to miss out on
just
that.
Just incredible. And each time I go, I want to kind of push myself a little bit more. And
don't you,
you know,
find that that's always interesting when you go to a new country? Like I could definitely go back to Iran again because it's just so different to anything that I've experienced in the rest of the world. And I feel like that about India as well. You've got that, sounds like you've got that desire to just keep heading back to Pakistan.
Yeah. It's great because, you know, when you finish a trip, you think about the next one.
Yeah. Mm. Addicted to travel, is that right? What would your top travel tips be to go to a place like Pakistan? I mean,
my top tip would be to actually go.
Yeah,
fair enough. Because that's the biggest problem, that people don't go.
And there is that fear surrounding that. And in fact, if you look on Smart Traveller today, our government will say, don't go, don't go, don't go. But, you know, the biggest... fallacy around all of these government websites about where we should go and where we shouldn't go is that they simply forget that there are people just like you and I in every one of these countries and we're not terrorists. We're not going to do anything horrible to anybody, are we?
Yeah. How many people do you... I mean, I'm sure there are statistics. How many people actually log on to Smart Traveller?
You would be surprised. It always amazes us. So we sit there, we promote Iran, for example, and so people will then come and book.
Yeah.
And then the next minute they'll say, oh, look, I want to cancel my trip. The government's saying it's... Or Egypt is another classic one where we see a lot of people. Yep. And so then we've got to sit down and turn around and explain, well, you know, the only reason that you shouldn't go would be, for example, if... tour companies, the greatest indication for us if a customer shouldn't go there is if the tour companies and the airlines have stopped going to a destination, then that is a very clear indication that we're not welcome there.
Well, also they have to suspend services because of risk. So exactly. They've evaluated the risk, which is without hyperbole. The thing about Smart Traveller is they will try and remove all risk or all reasonable risk. The government has to make sure that from a legal perspective that they have told you and warned you.
Yes.
What that does is creates a level of panic, but they have to warn reasonably. They have to make sure that the average person was properly informed so that if anything happens, they can turn around and say, well, you were warned.
Yep.
So it's not necessarily rational
and
risk.
And is a travel agent responsible for giving that advice as well?
No, we would certainly send out a confirmation to you and turn around and say, look, you know, there is a website called Smart Traveller where you can go on and you can check and make your own educated decision about whether you should go to these places or not. But again, we would always refer back to, you know, if the airlines are flying there and the tour operators are operating there, they have people on the ground, they know it's safe to do. And what Mark's saying is quite right. Our government has got, I guess, a legal responsibility to look after our citizens, and that's why they pass that information on.
Well, they've got a pretty strong fiduciary obligation to make sure that they've protected the health, wealth, and wisdom of the people of the country. So if there's a plausible threat, they're going to warn you of it. And it's quite, if you look at the language, it's very considered language. You may wish to reconsider. So it's not like don't go. And they're very, when there is a big risk, they say don't go, but they do give you reasonable risk analysis. And that's why, if you have a look at Smart Government, you can tell it's written by lawyers. They'll talk about you may wish to reconsider your need to travel at this time. If they turn around and say no, that's a real no. Don't do that. Don't go to Syria. Don't go to Iraq. That's a no-go. And they're quite explicit in, we highly recommend, unless you have, you know, these contingencies planned for, or there's the particular reason for your mission to go there, and it would be a mission because no one's touring Damascus at the moment for you know, the hotel pools and the cocktail lifestyle. Did I get any of that right?
But it was a bit of a mouthful coming from you.
It is. But it was also very difficult to get there. So this is what Russ is reflecting on. You're not getting an airline to take you there. You're not getting a tour bus to take you to the Baghdad Hilton because it just doesn't exist anymore. So it's not going to happen. And that's danger.
So thank you for clearing that up, because we asked that question a lot.
I charge in 6-minute increments.
I think you explained it fabulously. Now, we are coming to the end of the show, and we do have a question that we ask every week, and I think some people panic, absolute panic, when they get asked this question.
We didn't tell you about this. No, you didn't.
Now, so the question is, do you fold or roll?
This is talking about being in a pressure situation.
You're jumping on a plane tomorrow. Do you fold or roll?
No, I definitely fold, but I was introduced to rolling by a very dear friend.
Oh, she's a convert.
Yes. He packed my bag for me and I said, it's full. And he goes, no, it's not full, Megan. And he repacked my bag. Rolling.
Okay, there you have it.
Yes, but that was kind of the last trip I went on.
She's a roller and a folder, so by packing we call that. Now, we are just about out of time here now. Thank you for joining us today on The Escape Hour, Joy 94.9. Megan, it has been a pleasure having you on. We know more about cricket now, and I can't wait to get a baggy green. Mark and Fiona, we look forward to seeing you both next week when our show will be about...
We are going to talk about health tourism.
Oh, sounds very exciting. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.